From my microphones in downtown Washington, D.C., this is D.C. Public Safety. I'm your host, Leonard Sipes. Every year at Halloween, what we do is to make special efforts regarding sex offenders who have histories of offending children. And we either call them in terms of a mass orientation, call them in to one particular place, or we do joint patrols with the Metropolitan Police Department here in Washington, D.C., and we send out our teams on the sex offender teams. Along with people from the Metropolitan Police Department. And we go and make unannounced and in some cases announced visits to the homes of these sex offenders with child abuse or child-related crimes in their background. Before we get into the program, I do want to thank everybody. We're up to 196,000 requests on a monthly basis for D.C. Public Safety, radio, television, blog, and transcripts. If you want to get back in touch with us, you can follow us at Twitter, www.twitter.com/Len Sipes, S-I-P-E-S, or reach me via email, Leonard, L-E-O-N-A-R-D, Sipes, S-I-P, not T, but P-E-S, at C-S-O-S-A.gov. To talk about what we're going to be doing on Halloween, we have two individuals with us, Paul Brennan and April Cole, and they're both supervisory community supervision officers from IAgency, the Court Services and Offender Supervision Agency. And to Paul Brennan and April Cole, welcome to D.C. Public Safety.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, what are we going to be doing tonight? April, what we're going to be doing is going out, and we have 500 active sex offenders on our sex offender unit, supervised by our sex offender unit. We're going to be going out and we're sending out, what, nine teams of community supervision officers and MPD folks?
Yes, tonight we're going to be conducting home visits through our SAFE initiative.
Mm-hmm.
That is a Sex Offender Accountability Field Enforcement Initiative.
Okay, that sounds very official.
Yes.
we're going to be going to the homes of sex offenders.
We're going to be going to the homes of sex offenders who reside in the District of Columbia, who have charges against minor children, or who have a condition which states that they can't have contact with minor children.
Mm-hmm. Paul Brennan, one of the interesting things that we have in our agency is that it's just not the active charge the person's on probation for, or if they come out of the prison. It's just not a sex offense that is their current charge. Anywhere in that person's history, if they have, if they've been convicted of a sex offense, we supervise them as a sex offender, correct?
Yes, that's correct. Many of our offenders are not currently on supervision for a sex offense. They may be on for a drug offense, a burglary offense, but in their background they may have a prior sex offense, and those are cases we also supervise.
And that's, you know, that's really interesting, because I came from the state of Maryland. I spent 14 years with the Maryland Department of Public Safety, and I don't think we did that. I think it was just the current charge, and I think most states, I really don't know, but most states, I've been told that they only supervise for the current charge. That individual, that woman, could be charged with a sex offense, convicted of a sex offense 10 years ago, and they're supervised.
Well, our rationale for doing that is that if an individual had issues pertaining to sex offending, deviant sexual interests, it's unlikely that that deviant interest is going to change in 10 years, and that if they reenter the system on some new criminal conduct, that sex offense issue surrounding that prior sex offense will be an issue that we need to address now.
You know, and I think that's clearly a public safety move on our part, because a sexual predisposition, April, doesn't go away. If you're sexually predisposed, if your sexual predisposition is towards children, that doesn't go away, correct?
No, it doesn't go away. And you really have to think of it in terms of what that person, and I would say in the general terms, really likes. It's what they are attracted to.
Mm-hmm.
So if you are attracted to 7 to 10 year old boys, that's your primary attraction.
Right, and that's not going to change overnight.
No, it's not going to change.
Okay, what we're going to be doing on Halloween. We have basically the size of some small police departments. We have 18 individuals in nine teams from our agency, the Court Services and Offender Supervision Agency. They're all from the sex offender unit. They're sex offender specialists. They're going to be going out with 18 people, individuals from the Metropolitan Police Department. And we're going to be going to the homes of these sex offenders. 150 out of the 500 active, of the 150 who have children as a history of preying on children. And we're going to be going, we're going to be doing what, April? We're going to be going to their homes, and what happens when we get there?
Well, we're going to go into their homes. We have instructed them that they cannot allow trick-or-treaters into their home. They mm-hmm. cannot pass out candy. We're looking to ensure that they don't have their porch lights on, that they're not having any types of Halloween parties or participating in any kind of activities that would allow minor children into their homes or...
Right. And one of the things that we've done in past years, Paul, is that we've even gone back to that same house several times.
Yes, that's true. So we may visit the house and then decide that we needed to go back and check to make sure they were still in compliance.
When our folks, whether we're with the Metropolitan Police Department or whether we're by ourselves, because you have fairly small caseloads on the sex offender unit, you have, I think these individuals go through how many on average face-to-face contacts a week? It's at least two a week, correct?
It can be a minimum of two to once a week, depending on their risk level. But
right.
the majority of people that have molested children, we're going to see quite often.
We're going to see a lot. So when you go into the home, not necessarily on Halloween, but when you go into the home at any time, you're looking for any evidence that that person has been involved in nefarious activity. So needless to say, if you walk in and there's a child there, we take immediate action. If you walk in and see pornography, if you walk in and the person's madly working the computer trying to erase files, obviously we've got something there that we're concerned about. So we're looking for lots of different things when we go inside that home.
We're looking for any violations of their conditions of release, certainly. And if we do see violations, we're going to take immediate action to address it. So if for example, an offender is prohibited from having contact with children, and we find a child in the home, there are some major consequences that are going to occur immediately.
Right. But, I mean, one of the things I do want to emphasize, and either one of you can answer this question, is that it's just not Halloween where we team up with the Metropolitan Police Department. I think we do 8,000 accountability tours throughout the course of the year where our folks plus MPD go out and visit the homes of offenders. In some cases, they are announced visits because we do want the family there because there's a concern that we want the entire family to be involved in, or the sponsor or the person volunteering helping that offender. And in some cases, it's a totally unannounced visit. So the Metropolitan Police Department is working with us every day of the year. Day in, day out. Our community supervision officers, and in most places they call them parole and probation agents, they're working with the folks at the Metropolitan Police Department. So I don't want to give the impression that MPD, the Metropolitan Police Department, that this is a once a year activity. This is an everyday activity. Every day we're exchanging information with them every day. They're looking at the global positioning system tracking. We have over 800 offenders on GPS on any given day. We have a lot of sex offenders on GPS. April, that's so the partnership with MPD is a given. It is a day in, day out affair, and this is just a continuation of that partnership.
That's correct. We have a great relationship with the MPD. Chief Lanier is committed to working with our agency to ensure that we're out in the community, that they're aware of who our offenders are. They're conducting accountability tours with us 7 days a week. We were out last month on a Sunday morning, and we conducted approximately 80 tours in a 3-day period.
Wow.
Friday, Saturday, and Sunday.
Okay. So our people are out there on the weekends working with MPD out there on the weekends, and we're making these special checks.
Yes.
So this is constant all throughout the course of the year.
It is.
And I just wanted to say that, ladies and gentlemen, because I think we have an extraordinarily good working relationship with MPD. In my experience in parole and probation, we had a working relationship with law enforcement, but nothing like what we do here in the District of Columbia. I mean, the MPD and folks from the Court Services and Offender Supervision Agency are out there every single day of the week. Okay, so 32 people, 9 teams going out, approximately 150 child sex offenders out of 500 active sex offenders. Paul, they're all different types of people that we call sex offenders, correct?
There are. I mean, you can put them in different types of categories, but there are those who rape adults, and there are those who expose themselves in public. There are those who molest children. So we're cognizant of identifying the type of sex offenders we're dealing with.
And that becomes the key issue. I mean, either one of you can get into this, but the key issue is that we do a lot of assessment. We try to find out as much of that person about that person as humanly possible, because if this person raped a girlfriend and doesn't have a history of abusing kids, that doesn't mean he didn't abuse kids in the past. Just because he had a sex crime against an adult doesn't mean he's not a child sex offender. Because they're a child sex offender does not mean that he didn't commit predatory crimes against adults. Or is it? Am I wrong? Do they have come to us with an MO and ordinarily stick to it?
The assumption is that there are other crimes that we need to uncover. We start there, and then our process is to identify the total scope of deviant activity that mm-hmm. they're engaged in over their lifetimes, and then make an assessment of where the risk may lie. So it's common that a sex offender who comes into the criminal justice system has committed a certain type of crime. Those who assume that is the only type of crime they will are likely to commit in the future may be missing a larger component of what their deviancy issues are.
Okay, so they can move from modality to modality, April?
Yes, they can, and that's one reason why it's so important to get an accurate sexual history on an offender. And our assessments really delve deeply into their sexual histories.
Right, and people need to know that we polygraph them. We put GPS tracking devices on them. We put them in treatment. And, you know, that's fairly controversial with a lot of people out there, is whether or not the treatment really does anything. But we maintain it does. We maintain that it teaches the sexual predisposition doesn't go away. But what we teach people to do is how to deal with that sexual predisposition in such a way that does not put them in prison for the rest of their lives in such a way as to protect innocent victims, correct?
Correct. I'd like to say that we have one of the most proactive, progressive sex offender units in the country.
I agree with that.
And our agency has really invested into making sure that we have everything that we need in place to supervise our offenders in the community.
Mm-hmm. Well, I agree with you that we're one of the most, and we may be the best sex offender unit in the country as far as I'm concerned, but one of the things that we've been talking about recently is the expansion of getting into additional social media sites, the expansion of looking at handheld computers, what most people call a cell phone or a smartphone. I call them handheld computers. My BlackBerry is just as powerful as my desktop was 5 years ago. So we're moving in other directions, and so we're trying to be as comprehensive as we can. We have a fairly small unit, fairly small caseload, but I do believe that your original assertion is correct. I think we're one of the best, if not the best, sex offender units in the country. But what does that mean? So we have one of the better sex offender units in the country. Paul, does that mean there are fewer victims?
It should mean that we're able to prevent further victimization that otherwise might have occurred had we not put in place some of the countermeasures that we do. So it's our belief that supervision has a powerful component in protecting community safety.
We're halfway through the program. I want to reintroduce our guest. Paul Brennan is a supervisory community supervision officer, and April Cole is another supervisory community supervision officer. These two individuals head up two of the three teams that we have here at the Court Services and Offender Supervision Agency regarding sex offenders. There are three teams, 500 active offenders. There are more offenders than that, but they're in mental institutions or they're in prison, but they're still on our caseload. And so, you know, we're talking about on Halloween, 150 of them who have had histories of child sex abuse or have given us any indication that they've had in the past a history of child sex abuse. Either one of you can answer this question. The people listening to this program, and we get a lot of college students who are studying criminal justice, criminology, or sociology, or psychology. We do a lot of college students out of the close to 200,000 requests on a monthly basis. They're hearing this, and they're hearing sex offender, and they're going, oh, my God. They're, you know, have visions of Hannibal Lecter. They're, you know, every stereotype on the face of the earth is flowing through their minds. But there's nothing about a sex offender that sets them out to be any different from anybody else, correct? I mean, they're just, they look normal. There's nothing there. I mean, certainly there are no horns. Certainly there's no blood dripping off the teeth. Yeah, I mean, you know what I mean. I'm trying to get to who these people really are. Paul?
They're the people that you may interact with every day and not know that they have issues of with sexual deviancy. These are people who have jobs in many cases. Some of these guys are the homeless people you see on the street. So there's a wide array of individuals who commit sex offenses, some of whom are never caught. So they can look like anybody. They can be somebody that you know and trust the most. So it's you know, you should always keep in the back of your mind that a sex offender has no particular profile and that you can identify from walking down the street.
And I think we've learned that from the members of religious orders who have been convicted or accused of child sex offenses. So they can be some awfully respectable individuals on the outside, correct?
The vast majority of offenders that we deal with have victimized somebody that they know. So, I mean, that tells you something. That tells you that these are people that typically are trusted. So many are within the family, boyfriends, people that coach or teach and have violated a certain trust. And those are the cases that we typically are dealing with. The guys who jump out of the bushes, drag women off the jogging path, those are the exceptions. We have plenty of those, but those are not the primary group of people that we supervise.
So for the parents who are listening to this program, it is not necessarily stranger danger. It is more the people who they know and who the child knows. April?
I think we've seen a little bit of it all on our teams. We've had the pastors, the ministers, the doctors, the priests, coaches, teachers, all walks, professions, attorneys.
It runs the gamut.
It runs the entire gamut. But when you're talking about child sexual abuse, a lot of the time, as Paul says, that we really need to be looking at our family members, those who have close association and ties with children are the ones that we're finding are committing these kinds of criminal acts against children.
So
the uncles, the brothers, the grandfathers, you know, the sex offenders don't look any particular kind of way. They look like
you. That's my point. That's my point. And one of the things that we came up with in the state of Maryland was that the most important thing you can do, because parents are listening to this and saying, well, fine, that's all interesting. Tell me how to protect my child. And we're saying child, we're talking about basically anybody under the age of 18. Anywhere from, you know, crawling to age 18. And what we say to them is that you have to have a loving, open relationship with your children, and your children should feel comfortable in terms of coming to you at any time for any reason. And if somebody makes them feel uncomfortable, that relationship should be there to the point where they come and tell you that this individual is making them uncomfortable, that that's the best thing you can do to protect your child and let your child know that it doesn't matter who makes you feel uncomfortable, whether it's Uncle Fred, the guy who lives down the street and walks by with his dog, or it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter whether it's a family member or outside the family. You have that relationship with your child, that that child can come to you and tell you that that child feels uncomfortable, because it's not that initial contact. It is a series of steps that the child sex offender takes to gain the trust of the victim and to victimize, correct?
Here's what I would tell parents, is that your child may be the victim of sexual abuse. They may not tell you, despite having the relationship you described, that what parents need to look for are what we call grooming behaviors. Those are the ways in which sex offenders gain access to children, break down their defenses that you have instilled in them. And those are some of the things that parents need to pay attention to.
Explain grooming behaviors.
Grooming behaviors, buying kids candy, taking them on outings, teaching them how to work on the computer, things like that are efforts by a sex offender to gain trust
right.
with the child. Those are the things that parents need to look for.
Okay.
Also remember that sex offenders are going to target kids that seem isolated from others, those who may be shy or have some self-esteem issues. They're going to target the kids they think they can molest and nobody will believe,
mm-hmm.
or the child is less likely to confide in another adult or another person. Many of the cases that we see are not because the child disclosed to the parent. They disclose to a teacher, another child, those types of situations. Oftentimes, the abuse isn't uncovered until there is a rift between the sex offender and the child. So the child gets upset at the sex offender and then decides to disclose after mm-hmm. a period of time. So,
mm-hmm.
so the dynamics are perhaps more complicated than just teaching your child to tell me when you've been molested.
Well, no. Tell me when you're uncomfortable.
Well, I think that
somebody makes you feel uncomfortable. I mean, what you've described makes perfect sense, Paul. But at the same time, how does the parent? You can't mistrust every human being that comes into contact with a child just because they're involved in behavior that could be considered grooming.
I think one of the important things you said here was, let me know when a person doesn't make you feel comfortable. Well, the sex offender's whole goal and what they're really good at is making that child feel comfortable.
Mm.
I don't know of many cases when a child comes and says, Uncle Larry makes me uncomfortable. That's their goal. That's what they're good at.
Well, you two are giving me an education here, and a much more precise education. Continue, April.
And for parents, I think that this is a conversation that you have to have over a period of time with their children. This is not a one-time conversation.
Amen.
This is a conversation that you have to be having daily and weekly with your children over a long period of time.
Amen.
And 13 to 14 isn't the time when you stop having these conversations.
Yep.
That's when you really...
That's when they're at most risk.
That's when you need to step it up.
Yes.
But children are... Look, I had two daughters. When they had 14, oh boy, they're hard to read. They're hard to read about, you know, hi, honey, how are you today?
Fine.
You know, I mean, when they get into that sort of interaction with parents, they're impossible to read. How do you read them?
Well, when they get older, the computer is a good place to look at what is going on in in the life of your child. So, oftentimes nowadays, in particular, if a sex offender is grooming a child, there's probably going to be some social networking activity that will give you an idea that they're chatting with somebody who perhaps they shouldn't.
Mm-hmm.
Texting, they may be getting text messages from the sex offender, so you may need to pay attention to some of the means by which the sex offender is gaining access to the child in today's world.
We're into the final minutes of the program with Paul Brennan and April Cole, both supervisory community supervision officers with Court Services and Offender Supervision Agency. What we're going to be doing is going out on Halloween, and there's 150 sex offenders out of the 500 active. There are more sex offenders than that, but the 500 active cases, 150 of those. In terms of 9 teams with the Metropolitan Police Department, we're going to be going in and we're going to be looking for any signs. April, we gave them all letters individually, and we've mailed them to the house as a backup plan, but we've talked to them all individually, and we've said no porch lights on, do not hand out Halloween candy, do not dress up in costumes, do not do this, do not do that, correct?
Correct.
Okay, and if we go there, your two community supervision officers and the two members from the Metropolitan Police Department, and that guy is in a clown costume, what happens?
Well, if we go in and find candy or lights or a clown costume, we're going to immediately put some things into place for that offender that night. He's
right.
Going to have to change clothes. We're going to have a conversation with them. The supervisors are going to come in. Depending on that particular offender, he may be going into custody that night.
Right, and I want to remind everybody that unless he's doing something ostensibly illegal, the folks in the Metropolitan Police Department cannot take action. What we have to do, because we have to get authorization to remove the individual to get a warrant from the parole commission or from a judge, and that doesn't happen instantaneously, correct?
Well,
in some cases it does.
In some cases, we've been able to get warrants on the same day, depending on how egregious the offense
right.
is. On tonight, we will probably not be able to do that in most cases.
Okay. But
we will definitely take action if we find an offender who is violating his conditions of supervision.
Right. And MPD, they walk in and they see a blunt object that looks like a smoked marijuana cigarette. If they see anything at all that the offender is doing illegal, then they can take action. They can immediately arrest on the spot.
That's correct.
Okay. So that's a powerful message. And the other thing is what we do with MPD is to jointly supervise not just sex offenders, but all offenders across the board. They get to know where they are. They understand. They pass on that information to other police officers who are patrolling that district. So all police officers are looking, making sure that this individual is compliant. I mean, we see them a minimum of twice a week in many cases, depending upon high profile cases. And we call them in, and we drug treat them. We go out and we make unannounced visits. But the Metropolitan Police Department, those officers are out there 24 hours a day, 365 days a year. So they're also looking and making sure that he is, quote unquote, in compliance.
We get phone calls quite frequently from MPD officers. Because we're out in the community with them, they know our offenders.
Mm-hmm.
And when they find our offenders out in violation or participating in questionable behaviors, mm-hmm. they pick up the phone and they call us.
Yep.
But what's important to note is that we have put our information into NCIC. This is the database that the police would access if they stop somebody.
National Crime Information Center.
So when they stop an individual for whatever reason, they will see when they run this check that they're on supervision. It will actually give the officer's phone number and
right.
name, and
right.
police will be able to contact us,
right.
to notify us.
So that individual could be in Charlottesville, Virginia. And yet, by going through NCIC, they know that the person is under supervision, and here is the name and telephone number of the community supervision officer.
Right.
That's pretty powerful.
Absolutely.
Well, first of all, I want to thank all of you for doing this. I mean, it's a really difficult job that you guys have. And I think the public who's hearing this is really grateful for what it is that you do and all the three teams do in the District of Columbia and in parole and probation agencies throughout the country, because we sort of feel that we have one of the better sex offender units, if not the best. But everybody out there throughout the country is doing their level best in terms of Halloween and throughout the year to supervise sex offenders. Our guests, ladies and gentlemen, are or have been Paul Brennan, a supervisory community supervision officer, and April Cole, another supervisory community supervision officer. They will be going out on Halloween Day in terms of 9 teams, 2 community supervision officers and 2 MPD officers. And they will be going out visiting about 150 homes of child sex offenders, and we will report back in terms of how well they did that evening. Ladies and gentlemen, this is DC Public Safety. We are just flabbergasted with the calls and letters and emails and Twitter messages that you end up giving us. If you have suggestions for the show, compliments, criticisms, you can reach me at Leonard, L-E-O-N-A-R-D dot Sipes, S-I-P-E-S at C-S-O-S-A.gov, or follow me on Twitter, www.twitter.com/Len, L-E-N, Sipes, S-I-P-E-S, and please have yourselves a very, very pleasant day.